It's almost a romantic thriller in a weird way. I think in a way it's not a sexual thriller, but I think there's provocative moments in it, at least with the use of emotion. And I think the relationship between Greta and Francis is a very interesting relationship, and it's obsessive.
That was Chloe Grace Moretz talking about her new film, Greta. I'm Neil Rosen. Welcome to Sitting Around Talking Movies. I'm joined, as always, by Bill Bregoli.
That's me.
And Bill McCuddy.
Green Book won, and in an important category.
Green Book won, and...
but we'll talk about Oscars later.
And Bill and I had a bet, and I just paid him off, and he just won $100 from me, but we'll get to that in a minute. But let's talk about Greta. And here's what this is about. Have you seen the movie Misery? It's the same movie, just not done as well. Chloe Grace Moretz is a transplant who just recently moved to New York. She's lonely. One of her
mother died.
Yeah, exactly. And she's living with a roommate who's a good friend, but the roommate wants to party a lot, and she's more like a school marmish, a little more like...
A little bit, yeah.
A little more keep to herself, and... she's on the subway and she finds a nice handbag, and she brings the handbag home, and she tells the roommate, you know, she opens it up and there's a wallet in there with ID, and she goes, I'm going to return it to the woman. And the roommate goes, well, let's take the money and what are you doing? And, you know,
have like, a spa day.
Yeah.
Lisa Rossman had a good joke on the show this week. She said, no New Yorker, you'd call the bomb squad if you saw a purse
on
the subway. But. Yeah, so the setup
is... the roommate's all like, let's spend the money and let's have a fun time and, you know, screw it, really. And she's like, no. And she actually walks over to the, you know, it's somewhere like locally. She you know, the address is in the wallet, and she walks over and she knocks on the door, and it's like a townhouse, like a...
It's a mews. It's a little house in the back of an alley that, like, is in the West Village, let's say, or something like that.
So she returns the... bag, and the woman goes, is played by Isabelle Huppert, and the woman is really grateful, and she goes, could you come in and have a cup of coffee? That's so nice of you. And she goes, I really got to go. She goes, it would really mean a lot to me. And she goes, oh, okay, fine. And they kind of bond. She has coffee, and they talk, and the lady tells her that she's lonely too, and she's living in the city, and since Chloe Grace Moretz is feeling a personal loss.
The actual movie is shorter than this explanation.
She becomes a kind of like a surrogate mom to her, and then she comes home and she goes, "I'm having, you know, I've developed this great relationship with this woman." And the roommate's going, "You're crazy! You don't know who this woman is. Why don't you just like, she's not going to be a substitute for your real mother. Just get off of this." And then I'll cut it short. The woman becomes
really?
Stalky, and then she becomes like, you know, stalky, clingy. She opens up a closet. Chloe Grace Moretz to get something because they're having a dinner, and she sees that there's 19 other handbags in there. So she's been doing with little post-it notes on each handbag. She's been doing this scam. She just wants to meet people, and Chloe.
And she may be doing bad things to these women.
Right.
We don't know yet.
Right.
At that point
Chloe
in the movie.
Grace Moretz says, "I got to get the hell out of here as quickly as possible." And so the woman becomes stalky, and then she becomes a psycho. I mean, she's nuts. And I thought, here's my review, I thought the first half before she goes off the rails, which is not really explained, there's nothing really in this character that I could see that transformation of going from this nice lady who's cooking, you know, like little...
Well, she lost her own daughter or became estranged from her own children. There's a little backstory here that you were too... you didn't catch it, or I mean, it wasn't clear enough to you.
Well, that's my problem. Is that the movie? I like the first half of the movie, but once she goes off the rails and becomes a nut job, I think the movie becomes derivative not only Misery, but like 100 other movies that I've seen. And it's very predictable and very B-movie campy. Bill and his daughter Lily were sitting behind me. There's a big reveal at the end, which was not a reveal. Bill figured it out. I figured it out. I restrained myself. I was going to turn around and tell Bill's daughter, like, you know who,
which
you know
people
who that
love
is.
At a movie when you turn around and,
yeah, and say, you know, have you figured out who that is? And let's just leave it at that. But I stopped myself from doing that. But you just know all the notes in this song. I mean, you just know what's going to be played next. And that was kind of like a drag for me. It's
I
like
didn't
I've
have
seen
a problem
this.
With any of that. I thought it was camp. I thought it was like Mommy Dearest in a way. And it was so over the top and fun that I say, and it's all Isabelle Huppert. I mean, she is amazing in this thing as the whacked out woman.
And I thought that what's her face in Misery did it. What's the actress?
Kathy Bates.
Kathy Bates was the better whack job, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but that's serious, and this is a camp kind of almost comedy, almost.
Oh, that's campy. Come on.
When this is like a funny...
You're my favorite author, you really are.
You know, neither of you guys have mentioned who made the film.
Oh, yes.
Oh, Neil Jordan.
Yeah.
Well, that's the real shocker. Here's the guy that did The Crying Game. I mean, such really, like...
Iconic.
You know, serious work, like... Name some of the movies, Bill Burgoyne.
Sure, clear it at me. You can't think of it.
Because I can't think of it, but he's done...
Well, no, The Crying Game.
Yeah, but I said Crying Game, but he's done...
Interview with a Vampire.
What?
Interview with a Vampire.
Yeah, but I mean, this is just like, what are you doing?
He did that.
This is like, sounds like a paycheck for everybody involved.
I don't know. I think he's having fun. His tongue is firmly planted in his cheek. And as I said, without Isabel, it's like there's no movie. Because Chloe is kind of, well, she's easily influenced, so she's... not playing a very strong character for a large portion of the movie. I thought the roommate was cute. I thought...
you thought she was cute
looking? I thought it was like a Brian De Palma movie light.
Yeah, light, very light.
With
like
a Hitchcockian twist that you will see coming. But
you'll see coming a mile. It's so obvious. I recommend it.
I thought it was good fun. I would go see it. And Bill Bregoli has not seen it, so... Based on his review and my review, what are you going to do?
If I had an afternoon off, I probably would see it.
There you go. That's my boy.
Yeah. Look, it's
got
not,
girls in it. I'm going to watch.
What's that?
It's got girls in it. I'm going to watch.
It's not... I'll say this. It's certainly watchable. And I mean, the first half is more than watchable. And when it does go off the rails, as obvious as it is... And look, if you've never seen... let me ask you. I wish your daughter was here.
You were not entertained.
Were
you entertained?
I was never bored in the movie. I was entertained in the
movie.
There you
go.
It's okay. But here's the thing. Uh-huh. I mean, we've seen thousands upon thousands of movies. So, of course, we see what's coming. Your daughter, who's, how old is she now? 18?
18.
Okay. Did she, No, she was.
I whispered to her the twist, and she goes, thanks a lot. You know, like.
She didn't know that.
No, she was. Okay.
The big reveal.
She was going to enjoy.
Okay.
She was enjoying it till I talked.
Okay.
Which often happens in this household.
If you haven't seen a million movies like we have, then maybe you'd find it more entertaining.
Well, I think it's, even if you've seen a lot of movies, I found it more entertaining than you did. But I get what you're saying.
It was all right. I mean, you know, to me, it's just like, I'm not going to ruin something, but there's Stephen Ray, a Neil Jordan veteran from The Crying Game, shows up in the movie, sort of like the way in Misery, that cop shows up, figures it out. There's a cop that shows up in Misery, uh-huh. If you remember. And, you know, it just kind of, I mean, it's just very, they took the template of the blueprints of Misery halfway through the movie and just kind of, we're just going to do that and just not do it as well, you know? And I can't say that Neil Jordan is not as good a director. I think Misery is much stagier.
It happens in a snowbound cabin for 90% of the film. And this is a lot.
Would you agree that Misery is a much better movie?
Oh, yeah, but I don't think they're in the same category. This isn't trying to be anything like Misery. Bill will see it with an afternoon off, and he will weigh in a future podcast. It didn't send you to the moon, you're saying, about this movie.
No, but I also wasn't really over the moon on a movie that's all about going to the moon, the lunar surface, which is a documentary. Did you see
what
this
one? What a blend, Neil.
Well, he set me up.
I teed him up.
No, I didn't see that either.
Okay, well, Bill McCuddy and I did see it. We sat in the screening room
Apollo
together.
Apollo 11,
too,
we should tell people the name
Apollo
of this.
Apollo 11. By the way, we discuss all these movies at length on the next episode of Talking Movies on CUNY TV, which will air on March 8th. And I hope you watch the Oscar, which we'll talk about how well we did.
If you're in the New York area, if you're not, we're going to try and by then we'll have a link.
Send out links, and it's with Lisa Rossman and Bill McCuddy and myself, and special guest this week from Rolling Stone, David Fear, and please watch it on March 8th. We'll talk about that more.
David Fear loved Apollo 11. So did Lisa. And
I don't get it.
to me, I just saw the same movie in First Man. They talked about how immersive this motion picture is. It has a tremendous amount of NASA footage that was heretofore unspooled. And
they make it look like it was shot yesterday.
It looks very pretty. Somehow he restored the footage that they found at NASA. So you're at Cape Canaveral. You're in the capsule. You're outside of the capsule. But as I said, I had that same immersive feeling in First Man. Which I found slightly more entertaining. This is very interesting for space nerds, and it's a very, very well-made movie. However, it doesn't tell you some of the things, like Johnny Carson's in it, for example, and Hugh O'Brien.
Who else? They're in for like a millisecond.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, like, in another movie, a narrator would have said such luminaries as these two, and then who knows how many else, who else was there. The camera pans around, and it, there's a lot of, a million people showed up in 1969.
It depends what they had the footage
of. Right, but they have Johnny Carson walking through it, and they don't say anything. Well, they also have a lot of footage that, as I mentioned before, has never been seen before, some of it in 70 millimeter, and they don't tell us in any way, because it's not narrated, what is new and what isn't new, and I would like to have known that. There's just some things that could have been filled in for me, that, but some people are loving and raving about this movie. It's 100% on Rotten Tomatoes, I believe. And
I'm not raving about the movie, and I'll tell you my take. But, you know, Bill Brigoli reviewed a movie a couple of weeks ago called They Shall Not Grow Old, where Peter Jackson took footage on really grainy, crappy footage from World War One and made it look like pristine.
Nice
like
and
it,
smooth.
Like
yeah.
It was shot yesterday. And, okay, the certainly the cameras and the film techniques were much better 50 years ago than they were
100 years ago.
So there was more to work with, but I was really impressed. I'm going to give you the positive before the negative. I was really impressed at how this, I mean, the guy looked at, what do you say, like 10,000 hours, Bill?
11,000 hours.
11,000 hours of footage, put together like a 90-minute or two, whatever it is, a little under 2 hours.
It's right at two, I think.
Like a two-hour documentary. And I am not a space geek, but I really was at the
time. You're just a geek.
At the time that it happened, I watched it. I mean, I'm very interested in the space program, so I'm very well versed in that, in the Apollo 11 mission as well as other space missions. And yes, on the positive side, to look at this stuff and look like it's as opposed to looking at the grainy black and white footage that they showed on television in 1969, or even the footage that they show you, you know. This is pretty remarkable footage, and that's great. But here's the problem with the movie. As you said, Bill McCuddy, I think the movie suffered from a lack of a narration track, and not just the fact of, like, here's who's at the blast-off site at Cape Canaveral, but, and I say this on the TV show, I'll say the same story, is that, you know, having seen a First Man and having seen what was that miniseries that that was on HBO that Tom
To the
Hanks,
Moon and Bat or something.
Yeah. From Here to the Moon, I think it was called. Yeah. And countless other documentaries and movies, narratives on this thing. Neil Armstrong, which nobody kind of, unless you were, when you were watching at the time, nobody really knew this unless you were at NASA, they were going to hit this autopilot thing. They were going to, like, crash land and go into some crater. And
on the moon.
When they landed on the moon for the first time, and Neil Armstrong grabbed the controls manually and flew the thing away from the crater and had like maybe 3 seconds or 4 seconds left of fuel left to let this thing go.
And they show the fuel countdown, but you're right. There's no sense of
drama.
Let
the LEM, the Lunar Excursion Module, land on the moon, and you had like literally three or four seconds left. And that's an amazing story. So I'm watching this, and I know that story, so I understand what's going on. But if you're for the unacquainted, yes, exactly what Bill McCuddy said. There's a lack of suspense where there could have been a narrator saying, you know, Armstrong grabbed the controls manually. There was no fuel, but there was it was a choice of either grabbing them or crash landing into a crater on the moon. And there's other things about that mission, too, that are very interesting and suspenseful that were omitted, and you're just looking at the footage, and it's basically, if you know, you know. And if you don't know, you're just looking at great footage, which it could have been infinitely more interesting and suspenseful of a movie.
Director's name is Todd Douglas Miller, by the way. It's one of his first films, and I think he did yeoman's work. I mean, it's well put together, and it does, as we've said, have a lot of interesting footage in it that's never been seen before. But I think, as I said on the show, it feels to me like the DVD extra off First Man. Yeah. And so
I admire the footage. I liked looking at it. But, you know, even though I know the stories, if there was a narration track where I would have, maybe there's a news story they could have added. And I didn't know that. Or yeah.
Well, I will
Johnny
say
Carson.
This. Something,
I didn't know. How did you hear
that, that is weird wild. We went to the moon. I was there at Cape Canaveral. And I wore a cape. I went as I went as Karnak.
Cape Kennedy at the time, actually. I don't even think it was called Cape Canaveral. Kennedy back then?
I think it was Canaveral. I think that's what they call it in the movie. But I will say that we didn't see it in IMAX, and it is going to be shown in IMAX. And I will say that if we have done nothing to discourage you from seeing it, you should probably try to see it in IMAX.
Yeah, it's true.
Because it would be probably...
You'd feel like you were really on the moon.
Yeah.
You know? Well, you know, if you... Well, I can't say if you're really a fanatic on this subject, you'll love it, because I am kind of a fanatic on the subject, and I would have liked the narration track. But it's good. Could have been a lot better. Okay. I'd say 3 apples out of 4, you know, on my Big Apple rating scale, which I occasionally resurrect here. You know what I mean?
3 planets.
Yeah. Oh, all right. Yeah. You know, so, okay, so Bill Brigoli again.
I don't know. It didn't sound like 3 stars.
We didn't
three
really
apples.
Sell it.
Yeah,
you maybe didn't sell two, it to all right, me. You know what?
This game works better when one of us likes it and the other one doesn't.
2.5 to 3. I don't, all right. Would you? Well, you
nah,
have an interest.
I'd probably
in,
give it a pass.
You're interested in the subject matter, though, aren't you?
Yeah, but I've seen other reviews. That weren't that crazy, and also another.
How's it doing in other reviews?
So and
really, I thought it was. Correct myself.
A friend of mine saw it too, and she went to a screening, and she said, my friend Allison, and she
Allison
said,
Bales.
Yeah, and she said it was too wonky.
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 What does that mean?
Wonky means overly scientific that you want to understand.
Yes. Well, there's very small. Maybe you could read it better on an IMAX screen. There's very very small type. That runs where they're showing you scenes in very elementary.
Yeah, that was another kind of frustrating thing.
Could you read that?
They're identifying things. No, but I was sitting way back.
And then there's really rude, very elementary drawings of like, okay, here's like the lunar capsule, and it's gonna like disembark from this other thing, and it's gonna reconnect with the lemon. It's like hand drawn things, and I'm like, okay.
No, I was right. It's 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. All right. But let me tell you how many people have reviewed it so far.
5?
No, more than that, but like 10.
Okay.
So we'll see. I mean, maybe we're in the minority once
again. Armand White hasn't seen it yet.
Right.
Well, there's your litmus test.
So speaking of critics and speaking of the final night that we live for every year, we were tube side.
All right, let's review the show. Okay, let's review the show.
For
what
the Oscars.
The show, Bill Bergoli?
What did I think of the show?
What do you think of the Oscars?
You know what? It worked fine without a host.
I thought it was great without a host. Jimmy Kimmel, or one of the late night guys, goes, it was so good without a host, they've already signed the no host for the next year.
I said that.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I tweeted that.
Oh, okay. Well, sorry. I'll give credit where it's due.
Maybe I should send it to Jimmy Kimmel.
Well, let's start out with our bet. But let's start out with something fun. So Bill and I...
Yes, it was fun.
Bill and I have been... Oh, God, it must be about 20 years. We make an annual Oscar bet. And
it used to be for a meal somewhere, and then at some point we said, "No, let's just do it."
When Bill didn't pay me off on like 4 meals, we decided to do cash, and I've won like the last 8 years, and this is the first time I lost.
Well, wait, I should say I usually take a sucker bet.
You know,
I mean,
during the podcast last week, we didn't tell people what the bet was.
There was no bet when we did the podcast.
There was no
bet. All right,
we
hadn't decided.
I'm going to tell you. I'm getting to that. I'm getting to that.
Yeah, eventually.
So Bill and I were on the phone, and we picked. First, it was like, all right, you want to take Rome or I'll take Green Book? And no. You know, we went through a whole bunch of, you know, Glenn Close. That's the bet we should have taken. I'll take Glenn Close, and you take the rest of the nominees.
But
we didn't do that. So we settled on. The category we settled on was Best Original Screenplay. And Bill had a very good point about Green Book and the movie that – what did you tell me? The movie that wins
– Well, that's the early indicator in the evening. What wins screenplay usually wins Best Picture.
Right. And I did not think The Favorite would win Best Picture. And I did think Green Book would win Best Picture, as I said on the show last week. And you said it would win Best Picture last week. And what did you say last week, Bill Bergoli? Did you?
I said it would win Best Picture if enough people put it in second place. And apparently
right.
they did.
It's the whole weighted system thing.
Right.
So I picked The Favorite to win Best Original Screenplay because it was tied for the most nominations with Roma. I figured they would give it something. I figured, never thinking Olivia Colman was the thing that they would give it.
At least it was a surprise and a
wonderful
speech.
Cool.
The best actress.
I mean, that was cool for Glenn Close.
But. Yeah.
But that's the way they honored that movie, not with Best Original Screenplay. So I took the favorite, and I said, Bill, if anything else wins in that category, then you win the $100. And lo and behold, he was right. Green Book wins. So for the first time in 8 years.
That's when I knew it won Best Picture. Also, I went to
You texted me during the show and said that you're sitting next to somebody. Bill went to some swanky thing and said, Bohemian Rhapsody is going to win Best Picture. I said,
I was told that by a producer who'd heard that movie was much more popular than people had imagined in Hollywood. He was not a voter, but I was amongst 500 Academy voters. And I can tell you two really interesting things. They cheered when Green Book won, which the next day a lot of people weren't.
I love the movie.
And when Olivia Colman's name was announced, there was like a wind tunnel gasp. It was like 500 people in stadium seating, because this room at Time Warner Center was called Jazz at Lincoln Center, has tiered tables.
Yeah, I've been there.
And it was, audible. Hmm. And like several hundred decibels.
That was the one, on the prediction show, talking movies, CUNY show, and on this podcast this week, that was the only thing that we got wrong, really.
Well, I said Richard Grant was going to be the surprise, and I was wrong. It was Olivia Colman. There's always one big surprise every year.
I think when we did the podcast, I said that Christian Bale was going to win Best Actor. And then I did the Weekend Today in New York, which I've been doing lately on the Today Show. And I said, if you asked me a couple of days ago, I would have said Christian Bale, but I'm changing it to Rami Malek. So at the end, I did pick Rami Malek to win, although I think Christian Bale was the better performance. But other than that Olivia Colman thing, and RBG, we all thought RBG was...
No, we didn't. I had Free Solo, and I was always on Free Solo.
Did you have Free Solo, Bill?
I'm not sure what I had, to be honest with you.
I said Free Solo from day one because of Maru. They got screwed 2 years ago.
I think on the TV show you said RBG.
Nope, I didn't. Okay. I said Free Solo.
Well,
I promise you.
All right, well, Free Solo won. And
Other than the awards, what did you guys think of the presenters?
I thought some of them were hilarious. I knew that...
First of all, they announced that what I said on the Today Show, and I'll say this again here, was that it's not going to suffer from lack of a host because they've got former hosts that are going to be presenters. I said Tina Fey and Amy Poehler, who did the Golden Globes,
hosted
the
Golden
Globes all those years, and they brought Maya Rudolph out as well. They were there, but they also announced that Whoopi Goldberg was going to be a presenter, and she didn't show up.
Turns out, they also said she was going to host.
That was the rumor.
That was the rumor. She really was sick, I guess, because she didn't show up at all.
No, there's a
I thought Melissa McCarthy was hilarious.
That dress that she wore?
With the rabbits on it?
She got the idea for that on Friday.
She got the idea?
It was Elizabeth McCarthy's idea. She got the idea on Friday. Talked to the woman who was in charge of design for the Oscars. The woman sent her mom out to CVS stores because, hey, it's Easter time and there are a lot of rabbits out there that can buy, plush rabbits. They asked the woman who designed the costumes for The Favorite if she'd mind that they did a bit of a riff on her costumes, and she said, no, go for it. And that it was all put together in 2 days.
Who was the tall
Brian,
black guy she was?
Brian something.
He was a good,
Brian with three names.
He was a
Darcy
good
James,
man.
Actor.
Yeah. He was a very good straight man.
Yeah.
That was one of the great fun parts of the night.
I'll tell you another pairing I liked. John Mulaney and
Awkwafina.
And Awkwafina were relegated to two categories that weren't even supposed to be on the awards. There was one of those, they were going to eliminate four of the categories and give them during the commercials. And, it was like best live animated short or something. And Awkwafina's like, great. It's great. We got the important ones. It was very, I'm not delivering it funny, but she was very funny. And Mulaney,
we're used to that
a
with
very
you. That's
funny
fine.
Guy was very funny.
Mulaney is funny. He's hosting Saturday Night Live again this week, I think. Yeah. And he's
a former writer
from that. And he has, I'm going to give a quick shout out for his, I think it's called Kid Glamorous
Kid
or something.
Gorgeous. Very
Kid Gorgeous.
Good. See it on Netflix. It's
funny.
One man show
at
Radio City Music Hall.
Yeah. Right.
Terrific. Absolutely terrific.
I thought the most dramatic, coolest moment for me was, so I'm not bragging,
but
I was...
The most dramatic moment was Glenn Close not winning.
Well,
that's the
most
dramatic
moment. I'm just talking about from a staging and directing standpoint. I watched it at this screening for the Academy voters, as I told you, we didn't see any of the commercials, so I missed the Irishman
commercials.
Commercials
were great. The Google commercials
had,
were
we
great.
We just had a big the logo.
Tango
okay, so the Academy logo was on the screen during the commercials. All right, so they come back from the commercials, but it looks to me like we've got the feed early before the rest of the country.
What was the delay, you think? Like, how many seconds?
There's no delay, but you're not paying attention. So what happened was, it comes back, the logo goes away, we're backstage, somebody's moving a piano, someone's moving something else around, and I go to the table, I said, oh, we're back early, this isn't airing out live. Camera goes through the stage, guy gets up from the piano, and camera goes over, and
Bradley Cooper
takes Lady Gaga's hand. They stand up, come up to the front.
Right.
And, man, I thought that was the coolest introduction to a song that I've ever seen. Yeah. So simple.
Well, did they cut away?
So great.
Did they cut away when they started actually, like, fooling around after the song in the table that you were
How
at?
Great was, did you see the tweet that David Spade sent out?
No, what did he say?
Is there any chance these two aren't fucking?
Well, she genuinely loves this guy. I mean, I don't know if it's in a romantic sense or not, but the thing is, you know, he apparently really nurtured her as an actress. I mean, she had never really acted in a movie before, and she owes a lot of that. I mean, you know, he directed the movie, co-wrote the movie, produced the movie, picked her. So she, like, loves him, you know, whether or not they're
she broke off her engagement with that guy. I don't think this is going to sound rude, but I don't think
scene in the movie.
I don't think Bradley Cooper is going to leave his supermodel girlfriend for Lady Gaga. Not because Lady Gaga isn't gorgeous. She is in a way, but he, I think
he's acting.
Was acting, yeah.
So what was that all about? Why? What was that? They were just going to recreate the lovey-dovey.
Well,
scene from the movie?
You realize the camera was upstage and headed toward the audience, and in a way that echoed the film. We were a lot of shots with the two of them.
Yeah,
singing,
that's true.
And it was
right
a huge audience watching.
Yeah.
They kind of harkened back to the film.
It was really well done, and I thought they were great. And
well, that was the highlight. The song was the highlight thing, you know. Although
the opening was probably the.
Oh yeah, that was Queen. That was exciting. Great. I don't think Adam Lambert's Freddie Mercury. He's not really trying to be, but that was. That was kind of cool.
Yeah,
I liked the monologue with Faye, Poehler, and Rudolph. I thought that was good.
I like Keegan-Michael Key coming in on the... fly him in.
Yeah.
You don't need a whole setup. You don't need a lot of jokes. Just put the guy in a harness.
You know what
I thought
was good? The show was a lot shorter than it usually is.
It was the shortest since 2012.
And I'm saying to myself...
And it had a nice ratings bump, they said. Yeah. Well, about 12%.
Because probably Lady Gaga and Bradley Cooper.
I think so.
So, you know... I'm saying, why was it shorter? Okay, well, if you have a host, like let's take Jimmy Kimmel, who I'm a big fan of, okay? You do the monologue, and then there's these obligatory dopey bits in the middle. Like 2 years ago...
Well, they're not obligatory. They do them, but they don't have to.
Right, so they took this whole group of stars out of the, it's not the Kodak Theater now. It's the
Your Name Here Theater. No,
there's
it's
Jimmy
the,
Kimmel
Dolby Theater. It's
the Dolby Theater.
Dolby Theater.
Right, and they took them all out of there.
And walked them next door to...
walked them next door to a real movie theater, and they started throwing candy.
Man's Chinese, Grauman's Theater.
Yeah, and then there's another year when Ellen DeGeneres was in the audience throwing candy out to people and stuff, and burgers or something
pizza,
like that.
Somebody bought pizza 1 year, yeah.
Well, yeah, they ordered pizza.
Yeah, so there's... Right, so... You don't really need that shit, to be perfectly honest with you. You know, it doesn't really enhance the show, which I think is pointed out by watching this particular. I was not bored during.
People forget that everyone in that audience wants the awards handed out. They don't want to see a tour bus of people coming in because it's just making the night longer. And as I pointed out in a bunch of, 90% of the people in that room are losers.
Sure.
Right.
One out of five in every category.
And it wasn't that political.
Is a winner.
I mean, Spike Lee made. I don't think anybody mentioned.
There was a wall joke.
What's that?
There was a wall joke that Maya Rudolph or Amy Poehler said.
And Javier Bardem spoke in Spanish and had made a couple shots at the wall. And
did you hear
Alfonso Cuarón.
Well, Trevor Noah, did you know about that joke?
Yeah, but I don't. Somebody explain that joke
right
to me.
By me, yeah.
He said I was backstage with Mel Gibson. And he said nice things about Wakanda. Well, explain this joke to me, though. Okay. He said some nice things about Wakanda.
He said everybody.
And then he said, and he used another word, and then which I won't repeat, and that got a big laugh, and I'm like, what?
The setup was this, is that Trevor Noah is from South Africa, and although he was not in Black Panther, people keep coming up to him and saying, Wakanda forever, Wakanda forever. And when he started naming a bunch of celebrities that even celebrities say, whenever they see me, I'm not in the film, but they say, because I'm from Africa, Wakanda forever. Even Mel Gibson came up to me and said, Wakanda forever. That was nice. He said some things before that were not so nice.
He said one more word, which was supposed to be, we were supposed to know what that other word is. Like, fuck Wakanda forever, or something. He said, and he said a third word, which wasn't as nice. And I thought, well, I don't get that joke.
Well,
here's the
joke that he did do. He said, I'm from South Africa, and he started saying some entire thing in whatever.
Afrikaans.
Afrikaans.
Right. And he said, which means, you know, we should all come together as people, and, you know, it was some really nice statement. And so he goes, but people back in South Africa were laughing hysterically because however he translated it, what he was really saying, if you know that language, was, I'm going to say something and these white people have no idea what I'm saying.
Oh, that's hilarious. That's great. I didn't read about that.
Yeah. So he goes, which means, and didn't mean that at all.
Oh, that's funny.
And he quoted some eloquent thing about,
so that's,
you know,
cool.
Coming
that's
together
like
was races an inside and a joke planet and people. But yeah, the real thing that he said, it was like, I'm going to say something now and white people have no idea what I'm, yeah.
That's clever.
So that's what he did.
That's called a joke bomb. Sarah Silverman did a joke bomb to me one time when we were at a screening for a movie. She sat right next to me, and she turned next to the guy she was with and said, 100% for my benefit or whoever else could hear it. And we weren't friendly. I mean, I'd met her before. So she said, I'll bet that it was a friend of ours movie. And she turns to her seatmate and goes, I'll bet that son of a bitch cut me out of this movie. And that's all she said. And then the movie rolled, and at the end, she wasn't in it. She got up and walked out. And it turns out she was never in it, obviously.
Yeah.
she was just fucking with me.
That's good. So you can't complain Oscar's so white this year. I got to tell you that one, you know.
No, and you know, all this bullshit about Green Book and how
Green
the
Book's
Academy
a great
is
movie,
old
and
white.
It really pisses me off that people don't. You know, what do you want from this movie? I'm gonna give the same rap I gave on the TV show. This is, you know, people want, you know, people that are complaining about Green Book said, you know, that. There are complaints about it, but they say, you know, this is not really the Dr. Don Shirley story. There is a documentary, if you want to see about Dr. Don Shirley, watch that documentary. This is the Tony the Lip Villalonga story, as told to his son, who tells the story of his father, Tony Villalonga.
From his point of view.
And a chapter in his life when he went on this road trip with this brilliant jazz pianist, and as told to his son, and the son wrote, you know, Mahershala Ali's not even in the movie for the first 20 minutes.
Right.
This is the Tony Villalonga story. That's what it is. The son tells the story that the father told him
Correct.
When he was a kid and tells that. That's what this movie is. So people are getting down on this movie.
I think it's a father, not son. I think it's a parental child relationship. I think that Mahershala Ali's portrayal of Don Shirley is wonderful. He won an Oscar for it. I think that, yes, there are a lot of old white people in the Academy, but they gave Spike Lee and they gave a lot of – it was in a very inclusive year in the Oscars. First, all the Roma love that it got and Black Panther. It was a nicely rounded evening as far
it
as
really
I'm concerned.
It really
was. Hey, you know one thing I noticed, speaking of Roma – I don't think anyone ever thanked Netflix. Am I wrong?
Net possible, yeah.
I mean, that's
interesting.
I don't
a lot
remember
of people
hearing
say
the word
this
Netflix.
Was a vote against Netflix that Green Book won.
That's what I
but
said.
But someone said.
That's what I said. I said
someone said they were
Netflix.
Pretty positive that movie was going to win with or without
well,
a weighted.
Well, that's my next question.
With or without a weighted
if
system.
If it wasn't a weighted system, and I'm just going to explain this in 10 seconds, that basically people aren't
really?
Just voting for, like, here's my favorite picture. It's like. I don't know, Bill. Can one of you guys do it?
It's
in like
1 10
seconds?
Through 8. You have to, and a lot of the voters I talked to didn't bother doing that. Some just picked
just
one.
Yeah.
Some picked like 3, but the bottom number, the least accoladed or the least selected film gets kicked out, and then they do another round, and everything moves up a notch, obviously.
Right.
And
So the thing is, Green Book wins because, in the words of our friend Robert Wall, that some people hate Roma and some people like Roma, and some people will vote for Roma for number one, but a lot of people will vote for it for number eight, so it's going to lose that way, so it just drops out that way, and Green Book wins kind of by default, if I'm explaining this properly. But here's my question to both of you, is if there was not a weighted system and you were just voting for the movie that you like the best, like the way it is in every other category, and the one with the most votes wins, does Green Book win? Does Roma win? Or does another movie win? If you just
Almost positive that based on what I was told by the people I talked to the other night who couldn't get through Roma, admired it, liked it, didn't have to watch the whole thing to give the director the best directing Oscar because they did appreciate how heartfelt it was. Didn't matter. They were not going to pick that movie. They were going to pick Green Book.
Do you think
and
Green
as
Book
far as another
won?
Movie
yeah,
that
probably would have won.
Well, do you think it would have been Black Panther, or do you think it would have been Black Klansman, or Star Is Born, or The Favorite?
Or The Favorite, which has got the most, you know, had 10 nominations. That's usually a bellwether, unless you're The Color Purple, which got 11 and won nothing. Yeah. I think that Green Book was the most Oscar-friendly movie. I enjoyed it. I'm glad it won. I don't get all the hate. Justin Chang in the LA Times
he writes for Variety.
Worst movie. Was it?
Yeah, I read that. Somebody wrote
worst
that
movie
like,
since Crash.
Somebody ranked the worst. It was very interesting. There was an article I read. I think it was in Slate or Collider. I'm sorry if I'm misquoting the source. They said Green Book is not the worst movie that ever won an Oscar that night. Which is saying that, like, there's some, and I like the movie a lot. I mean, it's saying that, but they said the worst thing is this thing called Skin. It won best short subject. And they went through this whole thing about this movie Skin, about how, I don't know, I should watch this thing. I mean, it's only like 6 minutes. It's about these racist people that kill this black guy, and then in revenge, the guy who killed the guy, they dye his skin black, and then the son kills the father because he thinks he's black. And they said that is the worst movie that won an Oscar.
Wasn't that Crash?
No, it was not Crash. Okay, so let's talk about why did Glenn Close lose? I mean, why? It was a career.
Because no one saw that movie.
When does that matter?
Well, when they're voting. No one saw it.
They sent it to them.
Sure.
They sent it to
everybody.
And
they probably watched it and fell asleep, like I did. The Favorite was more fun to watch.
He makes a really good point. Like, that movie is a slow boil for her performance, and nothing really happens that you'd win an Oscar for until late in that movie. So if you didn't get more than an hour into that movie, you didn't vote for her. You had to see that big meltdown at the end. And it's not even that big a meltdown.
No, Olivia Colman had a British accent and wore a costume and had bunnies.
But she wasn't a lead performance.
Well,
boy, talk
know,
about that was the
she's
shrewdest.
Not a lead performance.
That was the shrewdest studio decision to make her lead.
You
and
add
the,
up the screen the other, time. Rachel Weisz, who's the real lead in that movie, who, I mean, Emma Stone comes in like 20 minutes in or something. It's Rachel.
In the beginning.
Yeah, Rachel Weisz she's the lead in the movie. Olivia Colman is the supporting role. Now, again, I keep quoting Robert Wall this whole show, but he goes, she did have more screen time than if you add up Marlon Brando's screen time in The Godfather, which probably is the case.
Sure.
But the movie was, you know, what's called The Godfather, and is The Godfather.
But it was a bigger performance than Glenn Close's.
I thought that Rachel Weisz could have been a lead performance in that particular
thing. But you're not listening. Emma Stone would have to also be campaigned in that category. There was no way Emma Stone's agent was going to let Rachel Weisz be nominated or put up for lead, and her and his client is that that was
is that
all
the only thing
all
that movie
that
won
is negotiated.
That's it, right? That's the only award The Favorite won.
That's the only one.
10 nominations.
Not production. No, that was Black Panther.
Bohemian Rhapsody. Lot.
Bohemian Rhapsody
editing.
Got sound editing. Film sound editing and
costumes
and sound
was costumes was
what was it?
Was that The Favorite? No.
No.
I think it was Black
Panther. Olivia was the only favorite.
Well, look, it was it was a great night as far as I'm concerned, $100.
And I enjoyed the Oscars. I really did. I was not bored, and I even liked the commercials, as I was saying.
I did not like those ABC commercials for, what was that, Whiskey something. That's how memorable that show is going to be.
And it's really
folks.
Interesting. If you watch the... It's the Lauren Cohan who's on The Walking Dead. She's in this new thing, Whiskey. What's it called? Whiskey
Cavalier.
Whiskey Cavalier. Thank you, Bill. Right. So we don't know. ABC doesn't know if Whiskey Cavalier is going to be a hit or a bomb. So Lauren Cohan, hedging her bets, they don't write her character out of Walking Dead. They just keep referring to her like that. She's like, well, she's gone off. We don't know where she is.
Well, I heard that Whiskey Tango is the reason Whiskey Cavalier was the reason that those four categories were shunted to the commercials of it, because
they wanted
it to be short enough that they could run it after like a post Super Bowl game show.
Mm. You know, her character Maggie on Walking Dead, they keep saying like, I don't know, Maggie's mad. We don't know if she's coming back. And they never explain to you why she's mad or why this is a central character on that show for so many years. So it's just basically if Whiskey Cavalier tanks, it's like they'll come up with this is why she's back now. But it's like they have not written her out of the series. It's kind of like, let's wait and see what Whiskey Cavalier does. And I wonder how Whiskey Cavalier, which we're taping this on a Wednesday, they had a preview after the Oscars and it premieres tonight on ABC. We'll see if that show tanks or what it is. I mean, I don't know. A
couple of quick notes. In Kevin Hart's honor, I watched finally Night School over the weekend with
Tiffany Haddish.
And I was very underwhelmed.
Yeah.
Not great. Can't recommend it. I wanted to also mention one other thing that we didn't talk about because it's newsworthy. We have now the worst James Bond title.
Oh, the new James
since
Bond?
Since Quantum of Solace. Quantum of Solace can breathe easily now because Bond 25 is, have you guys heard what this is going to be called? Shatterhand. One word, Shatterhand.
Shatterhand?
Yeah, I mean...
Like a hand, like hand, foot?
Yeah,
hand?
But it must be the name of either a character or a place.
Yeah, I read that it was a character in one of the novels.
To this. The report also claims that the plot would be based on somebody named Raymond Benson's 2001 novel called, get this, Never Dream of Dying. That's a much better James Bond title than Shatterhand.
Shatterhand.
Don't you agree, Neil?
I do. I'm going to show you something.
What are you looking up?
This is the top story of an entertainment news right now.
Bond 25 casting gears up as production nears spring start. Yeah.
Yeah, so they're going to start filming it like real shortly, I guess.
Yeah, and it sounds like something Sean Connery would say when he was drunk.
It's the 25th James Bond movie.
This fucking place I just shot a hat.
They're still looking for two female roles, one a new M16 agent and the other an accomplice, similar to Olga Kurylenko's character in Quantum of Solace.
Funny enough, guess what I think is going to happen when Judy Dench
The writer-director is Kari Joji Fukunaga.
Okay, that's all fascinating information, Neil.
Okay.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
We all have Google. I think Olivia Colman could play M.
Sure. She could be the new M, but it was somebody else. It wasn't somebody taking the place in the end of the last Bond.
Judy Dench is not back?
No, I think I think Judy...
Judy died.
Judy died in... the fuck's the name of that house?
Yes,
Skyview.
Sky.
Yeah, whatever the house is.
Sky Dance. Sky something.
Look, I would love Olivia Colman be great, but she's stupid now. She's going to be offered a lot more interesting roles than to be James Bond's boss.
She's playing the queen in the next version of The Crown.
So I'm reading an article as we're talking. How rude of me! But it's a question I
wish I could
ask, and I'm trying to get the answer to it. So I watched the trailer for The Irishman during the Oscars, which, I mean, it's great. I mean, you got De Niro back with
Pesci.
Where
is they may do a theatrical release of it?
Well, that's what I want to talk about.
But I do it a lot shorter.
So were they
when I talk about
were they actually thinking of doing a Roma on this initially, which would be like release The Irishman, probably the most anticipated movie?
Yes, of course they were. First
of
all,
one week for Oscar.
It's 8 hours long right now. They're going to cut it down, but I'm friendly with somebody who's in the movie. And he's
8 hours long.
He's very friendly with Thelma. Yes, there's 260 scenes. 260 scenes.
So it's
going to
be like a Once Upon a Time in America where they're going to truncate it and do the
well, they're gonna 90
have to
minute do something.
Shitty version, and then they'll have the director 3.5 hour cut that comes
They could do a Kill Bill 1 and 2 thing. They could do...
I'd rather see the whole thing, you know, than...
I'd rather you talking to your mic.
I'd rather see the whole thing.
There you go.
Okay.
I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, Netflix would like the whole paradigm to shift so that we don't care about whether or not it's in a theater
first. Well, they'd like that, but studios don't want that, and
but they're
theater
not a
owners
studio.
Don't want that.
They're Netflix.
So what do you think is going to happen, Bill Regoli? Do you think they're going to release it theatrically for like a few months, and then it'll creep onto Netflix, or you think it'll be like a week or two, and there, boom, Netflix?
Don't know. I think
it's going to have to be
day
a week
day
or two.
Or yeah, close to
and
it.
Then go to Netflix. I mean, yeah. On the other hand, it costs close to $300 million. I don't know how they think they're going to get that money back. But see, Netflix still doesn't make any sense to me. And I apologize to the people who at Netflix who are very nice to us and send us links and everything.
Yeah, they're great.
I don't know how they're making money. They don't have enough subscribers. Now, if they get into China... And the global expansion, apparently the business model makes a lot more sense in smaller countries. But in our country, there aren't enough people subscribing to it. So they go out and spend $300 million for, and they just spent a lot of money promoting Roma to get.
$25 million.
Yeah, to get, including all the books they sent me.
Well, I have a prediction. I think that, I think that The Irishman is going to... play in theaters for a little while. It's not. I don't think it's going to pop up on Netflix 2 weeks after it gets its theatrical debut. But I would rather see it on Netflix in, you know, four parts and see 8 hours than seeing some, you know, chopped up 2 hour version of it.
Well, the other thing they could do is they.
I'm used to Netflix has trained me. I'm used to binge watching. I saw Russian Doll. It was 8 episodes. I'll watch the whole thing.
So overrated. Sorry, Lisa Rossman.
It's good.
This is. This will piss a lot of people off, but what they could do is the first 2 hours. They could put into theaters the first 2 hours, and then you'd have to go watch the rest of it on
That's
Netflix.
Brilliant. That is a brilliant idea.
And that may be what they'll do. It'll piss people off, but and everybody wants to see all these guys back together.
So you never put the first 2 hours up on Netflix? In other words, do those first 2 hours go up with the other 6 hours?
Yeah, probably. Why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you put it up? Because then you just wait till the 2 hours are up there. You don't have to go to the... You wait 2 weeks.
No. Well, you could, but you're talking about like a significant run in theaters of like, let's say, 4 weeks.
I'm talking about a traditional run in theaters
bucks.
Where, you know, Green Book gets released in
but
theaters.
All I'm saying is that once it's...
Hey, it plays for 2 weeks and
no,
it's
maybe
awards
you're
consideration.
Right. Maybe it plays for a traditional run and the other 6 hours are on at the same time. But you have to go to the theater to see the first 2 hours.
Mm. Okay, I think you put the first... You don't put anything up on Netflix for 2 weeks. And then you have the first 2 weeks where it's theatrical. And then after the first 2 weeks, you put up the next 6 hours. And you don't put up the first 2 hours for 3 or 4 months later.
Yeah.
I think we'll get 6 coffee table books.
All right, so let's make some
Guinness.
Early predictions. Irishman, best picture at the 2020 Oscars.
It's our colleague Jeffrey Wells put up a bunch of leading contenders already.
What's there? Tell me.
Well, it's all guessing based on what's scheduling to come out. I can't even remember the list. I just thought it was so ridiculous.
Well, let's remember
that
First Man was a front runner to like. Be a big Oscar contender this year, and what were some other films?
I think
the
Clark
Ruth Bader Ginsburg
been...
thing. Remember, they were going to tout that one. Not the documentary, the one with
on the basis of sex.
Yeah, what's her name?
Felicity Jones. Yes.
Yeah, and Armie Hammer. So I mean, there are these movies that you look at and you go, "Oh, that's getting nominated for an Oscar." Look at the pedigree on this thing, you know?
Right.
And they just kind of die on a vine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And who would have ever thought that like
Tarantino's 1960s
the Bollywood movie that won
Slumdog Millionaire.
Yeah, I mean, like
some people still complain about that.
But nobody was even that was on nobody's radar. Even the studio that released it.
Yeah, but as soon as I saw. Right, I thought it would.
The studio that was going to release it was going to put it like
on Fox Searchlight.
Quentin Tarantino's 1969 will be an Oscar contender next year.
Mm. I'm so looking forward to that. I hope it's better than his last movie, which You know, I just love all the Tarantino movies, and I just thought the last one. I mean, not that everybody's not entitled to
Django?
No, I love Django. It's the one where they were all in that, all holed up in that room in the West with, you know the name?
Yeah.
Hateful Eight.
Yeah, Hateful Eight.
Yeah, that was not good.
I like that.
Yeah, I don't know. Not good. Well, you happy with Spike Lee's win for a best adapted screenplay?
Yes, yes.
That was good. And
what's in Sam Jackson's wallet? Spike Lee. He just jumped up on him.
We knew Regina King would win. That was no surprise. We knew Mahershala Ali would win. That was no surprise. The song we knew would win. That was no surprise. I give you credit for Free Solo, Bill. I did not think that was going to win. And we all got amazing Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. We all knew that was going to win.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there was just that one surprise. That one big surprise was Olivia Colman. And I liked the show for what it's worth. People tell me they were bored, but, you know, I don't know.
Mrs. McCutty thought it was useless. But, you know, people, there's fatigue. You know, I think regular people.
Interested in the subject.
I think regular people don't
want to. I drank half a bottle of Malbec during the thing, and it helped out. Fine.
Yeah, that's good.
I had a party
you
for
and
one.
Olivia Colman. I think I think a couple of people had been didn't Definitely think they were going to be up there. Were what was that? Those three foreigners that was who won for costume that wouldn't shut up and had the weird notes to themselves, and the music played. They didn't leave. They went to the next presenter.
Oh yeah,
and they're still standing.
I said
there.
To my wife, just what they're going to cut. They're just going to take them off camera now, you know, and you could see it was a wide shot, but they're still talking. They're still talking. You know, they had no way.
Hey, but we're not still talking.
No,
and we're not. Hey, next week we're going to talk about, what are we talking about?
Quick throw it at Bill.
You seemed so excited.
You know, there's a big movie.
You mean Captain Marvel?
Oh, Captain Marvel. That's right. I was excited. Captain Marvel, which we're seeing early next week. We'll talk about that. That's the big movie we're going to talk about on the podcast. And we're also going to talk about Triple Frontier, a Netflix film starring Ben Affleck and Oscar Isaac, which Bill and I have seen already. And we can't talk about it now because we're under review embargo. But we'll talk about that next week.
Yeah.
And we'll also talk about the fact that we'll promo more about our television show on CUNY.
I look forward to that.
All right. There's a bunch of stuff next week. And but Captain Marvel with Brie Larson. Hey, look, a woman playing Captain Marvel. That's pretty pretty radical.
Inclusive.
Pretty radical. So we'll talk about that. So, Bill, what do we do on this show every week?
We bet $100 and I win.
Well, first time in 8 years. Congratulations. They say in Yiddish, Zayn Gezint. That means, or Mazel Tov.
Gesundheit.
You know? There you go. Thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. For Bill Bregoli.
As I say, innuendo and out the other.
And wow. Bill McCutty, who you can follow.
Funny stuff. At Bill McCutty.
And you can follow me.
I want the other half of your mailbag.
At Neil Rosen Apples. And as I said, thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. We'll sit around talking movies again with you next week.